Welcome to the New Mind Creator Podcast with your host, Maurice, the New Mind Creator. Today I'll be interviewing Lynn Del Mastro Thompson. Please make sure to hit the subscribe button so that you receive alerts when new episodes are available on Sundays at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Also, please leave me a review on iTunes or Spotify. You know, Lynn, when I saw that you have your master's in somatic psychology, I was like, that's an interesting degree. How would you describe that degree?
Yeah, I would describe that degree as it's a field really where we look at the mind and the body. So a lot of psychology programs really just focus on, you know, our minds. And that program actually looks at the interface and the degree and the way that I was trained looks at the interface between how our bodies and our minds kind of work together and our bodies can affect our health and our mental well-being.
Could you give an example on how that could play out? I know there are probably many examples, but just one would be good.
Yeah. So, I mean, there are many different kind of schools of somatic psychology. And when I went through the program, some of the ones that really resonated with me were looking at things like how you can use movement to express what's going on emotionally for someone. So there's something called like authentic movement, which is a school of somatic psychology and a practice. And in that, it's not a traditional talk therapy session. It's allowing the person to move their body in a way that's kind of expressing what's going on for them emotionally, psychologically.
Okay. And I've heard, you know, this throughout the years that, you know, our genes play a role, a great role in different health issues that we may develop over the years. But you believe that we have more control over our health than we are led to believe. Could you expound a little on that?
Yes, for sure. So, you know, the old paradigm, as you're saying, is, you know, that the genes that we got from mom and dad and even, you know, grandma and grandpa and so forth further back really affect what happens in our health. You know, you hear people all the time say things like, you know, cancer runs in my family, or, you know, oh, my mom had that problem, I'm probably going to develop it. And in about the last 20 or so years, the field of epigenetics, which is really instead of looking at the genes, it's looking at how the genes express themselves, has really come to the forefront. And that was also part of what they started to study in the Human Genome Project, which I can't remember exactly when that was done. I think maybe the early 2000s that they were doing the Human Genome Project and looking at, you know, they thought we had a lot more genes than we do. And so they said, well, how can we have the same number of genes as, you know, people have the same number of genes as some small organisms. And what they started to realize is that genes turn on and off, they activate, and there has to be something that influences them to turn on and off. And so really what has come to be understood through that field is that it's a lot to do with the choices we make from, you know, the foods that we eat to whether we exercise or don't exercise, our stress level, and probably most interesting to your audience, since you're talking about the mind, the beliefs that we have, the thoughts that we think every day can actually change our biology and the genes that are activating.
How can we begin to change that paradigm? Say, for example, if someone, they may not be in the health situation that they would like to be, their health is failing. In what ways can they influence their bodies through thought?
Yeah, there's so many ways. I mean, the first is just, I think, to really start to become more aware of what you are thinking on a daily basis. So are you thinking things like, my body is broken, you know, I'm sick and I'm never going to get better? Really catching yourself in those thought loops is really one of the key steps to try to figure out, you know, what are you telling yourself? Because what we tell ourselves on repeat is what we start to create in our bodies and in our lives. So that's kind of one way to consciously start to work with it, is to notice those patterns. And then when you catch yourself telling yourself something like, you know, I'm sick and I'm never going to get better, to choose a different thought and replace it, kind of using a pattern interrupt technique to replace that thought and choose a better one. And then through the work that I've been trained to do with hypnosis, we can also dive deeper, because, you know, the subconscious mind is running the show 95% of the time, which is pretty stunning when we think about, you know, we think we're in control of our lives, and yet the subconscious mind is the one that's doing a lot of the running the old programs, running those old beliefs. And so with something like hypnosis, we can actually go in and start to work with reprogramming the subconscious mind with those new beliefs, similarly to working with the conscious mind, but it can be a lot more powerful because the subconscious is in charge so much of the time.
So how do you go about hypnotizing someone? Because when I think of hypnotism, I think of someone having some watch like swinging back and forth or something, and, you know, talking to someone. And I know that's an exaggeration from seeing TV programs over the years, but how do you hypnotize?
Yeah. So yes, you're exactly right. And that was my impression of hypnotism before I started to work with somebody, you know, and I thought I was going to look foolish, but really hypnotism is, it's a lot like meditation. So when I actually went through my training, I realized that in a way I had been kind of hypnotizing people for years without being labeling myself as such. You know, I would work with people and I would write meditations, guided meditations. And the main difference between meditation and hypnosis is, in the beginning of a hypnosis session, there typically are some processes that we take people through to just help them relax more fully, so that kind of their conscious mind moves a bit out of the way and we can access the subconscious. So we use things like just different breathing techniques, sometimes rolling the eyes up, you know, as far as they'll go when they're closed. That changes kind of your brainwave state. So it's a very quick way to actually help people drop into hypnosis.
Now, can this be done also, because I know right before sleep, we're in a really drowsy state, and the conscious mind is not so much in the way. Can we utilize that time and that space to help us also imprint or suggest things to our subconscious mind?
Definitely. And that is actually one of the times that it's most powerful, you know, if you're using a hypnosis audio, to use it before you go to sleep, because you are already kind of going into that suggestible state. Your brainwaves are starting to change. And it's also a time when you start to teach people a little bit of how to self-hypnotize, which is basically, you know, once you learn how to be hypnotized, you can start to teach yourself how to just go into that relaxation quickly. And then you can give yourself kind of those suggestions at that time, right before you go to bed, of whatever you want to kind of reprogram your mind with.
And you have extensive training in this, of course. How do you know when you have access now to the subconscious mind, when you begin working with someone and you take them through your process, how do you know it's time, or the subconscious mind now is available?
Usually, you know, by the time you take someone through several exercises, you know, as long as they're not completely fighting you, they are in that state. And, you know, one of the other things that people wonder is, well, do I have to be like really, really deeply relaxed in order for it to work? You know, I've had clients ask me that, like, I feel like I'm just a little bit relaxed. Is it still working? And there's different schools of thought on that. But the way that I was trained, really, as long as you're somewhat relaxed, you are starting to have access to the subconscious mind. So as long as that person has kind of just allowed themselves to relax, then you can go right in and start working with the actual suggestion part of the process.
Okay. And I know you're a hypnotherapist and also an energy healer. Could you describe what that means, energy healer?
Yeah. So, you know, there's many different systems of working with energy to help heal the body. The two that I'm trained in, which are particularly kind of related to each other. One is called body talk and the other is called body intuitive. And in my particular way of working with energy healing, I am helping to facilitate the body in healing itself through by basically helping the person understand the story that their body is trying to tell through the symptoms they're experiencing or through the illness that they're dealing with. So it's a process that's highly kind of intuitive, and yet there's also a lot of science behind it. There's the science of quantum physics is actually really the backing of doing a lot of this energy work. And I'm tuning in to that person and tuning into, you know, what is their body trying to communicate to us, and then helping to shift that story for them.
So the body is telling them a story, but they are not aware of the story. So they're just subjected to this constantly day after day until they seek help and get a change.
Right. Yeah. Typically, you know, people are dealing with, you know, symptoms or they're dealing with a chronic health issue. And, you know, it's like, why is this happening? A lot of times we get really frustrated. You know, you go to a traditional doctor and you're just kind of given a diagnosis, given medications. And yet really the body, I always like to say, doesn't have words to communicate. It would be really helpful if our bodies could talk to us in words, but they can't. And so their language is really the sensations and the symptoms that we experience. But most of us over time, I think probably, you know, when we were young, maybe we could intuitively pick that up. But over time, we've been conditioned out of that to understand, like, well, what's happening in my body? And we need help of someone to kind of translate that message for us.
And that lets us know that our bodies is a filter. So every experience we've had in our lifetime is in our bodies until we release it. That's why when we can access different memories, sad memories, angry memories, whatever memories, when we are accessing going back, we can also just like that, we have the emotion associated with it as well.
100%. Yeah, I always say kind of the body is like the storehouse of all of our memories and our emotions. And, you know, if we don't, part of the work that I do with the energy healing is also to help release some of that emotion that's gotten trapped in the body, which can over time lead to things like pain and other symptoms.
And you, I would say this, you are not your diagnosis, you've said. Why is that so important to understand?
Yeah, it's very important. And that phrase actually comes from my own story, because I was in my 20s, I was diagnosed and actually misdiagnosed with leukemia. And I felt like I had become that diagnosis in people's minds. You know, when I would talk to my friends and, you know, family, it was like, oh, you know, how are you doing? What's going on with your treatment? And I felt like I was just the cancer patient. I had lost who I was. And when we become that identity, it takes over our life, and it really blocks out a lot of possibility for healing, because we become so anchored in it that it's like, oh, I'm always going to be, you know, Lynn the cancer patient. I'm not just Lynn anymore. So I really believe that we have to shift away from that, shift out of becoming identified with whatever diagnosis we might be given, if you've been given one, and just create that space for possibility of healing.
And how did you overcome that misdiagnosis at first? I know that possibly caused some fear in you initially, and then working your way through that.
Yeah, it you're right. It caused a tremendous amount of fear, you know, to go through that process of receiving that diagnosis. And I actually, because I wasn't being treated correctly, I also physically declined a lot. I was being given the wrong medication, not the right treatment. And it was basically about a year and a half into that process, I had sunk into a really dark depression. I had another trauma in my life. My best friend passed away about a month or a year and a half after I had been diagnosed. And I started to come out of that finally when I realized I was in over my head. Like I had so much trauma and so much emotion, and nobody had taught me anything about how to cope with that. So that was where first I started actually going to a lot of therapy, started seeing a therapist. And then I opened out into kind of a lot of other alternative healing fields. So I started, first I went for biofeedback therapy. And in that process, through kind of seeing all these different signals, like my heart rate and my breathing on a computer screen, I started to learn, oh, I can have a little bit of control over my body. I can start to relax and calm myself down instead of just feeling like anxious all the time. And then I started exploring things. My therapist had actually suggested, go to this class that's called Yoga for Healing. And I remember when she brought that up, I thought, you're crazy. Because my conception of yoga was like, I saw it, people doing it in a gym. And I thought, I'm really sick. Like, how am I ever going to go to a yoga class where, you know, I'm going to stand on my head? What are you talking about? And she convinced me that this class was very different. And I went. And that class really taught me how to be in my body in a way that felt more at peace. I think, you know, I had started to see my body as the enemy over that 18-month period. It was like, my body failed me. You know, I'm sick. This is awful. I feel trapped. And just through kind of lying on the floor, doing these small little movements and breathing, I was like, oh, I can feel like little bits of peace in my body. I can befriend my body again. And those two things kind of just opened the door. I started trying basically just all the things that came my way, from acupuncture to Reiki for some energy healing to anything that people were like, have you tried this before? No, but it sounds interesting. I'll give it a try. And those things made me feel better in a way that, you know, I was going through this horrible experience of the doctors weren't listening to me as I kept saying, you know, I don't feel like I'm getting better. You keep saying that my lab tests show this medication is working. And yet I lost like a scary amount of weight. And, you know, people would tell me like, don't lose more weight. And I'm like, this is not a purposeful thing. I was just very sick. And when you get very sick, sometimes your body just wastes away instead of being able to maintain a healthy weight. So, you know, all of these things were just so helpful to me in learning to have a new relationship with my body and to bring some ease in a way that the medical system was not bringing me any ease at all.
So when you began to bring peace to your body and access that peace that you found, because you said you saw little pockets when you would do certain things. So when you began to access this piece that was already available to you, but you just didn't access it and didn't know how to, what began to happen with your physical body?
I believe my body began to create more space for healing. Like before I even got the correct diagnosis, because I was treated for the wrong thing for 3 years, which is an incredibly long time to not be given the proper care. I did start to feel better. I did feel like some level of healing was happening because, you know, when we come out of that fight or flight state, you know, when we're in fight or flight, we can't heal. Our bodies are, that's not available to us. It's just physiologically, our bodies are like, I'm busy getting ready to fight off a tiger. It's not important to heal a wound. So as those different tools kind of taught my body how to come back into a more parasympathetic rest and digest space, then my body could actually start to do some of these processes and start to bring healing to itself.
So are you doing what you thought you would be doing presently when you were a child?
No, definitely not. You know, when I was a child, I think I didn't quite know what I wanted to be. There was a moment there where I thought, maybe I'll be a therapist. And then I thought, I'm an empath. And I'm like, well, I didn't know, you know, I was an empath. I was just like, I'm incredibly sensitive. And I don't know how I would deal with people telling me their problems all day long and not drown, basically. So I went a completely different direction as I kind of matured and I went to college. I was pursuing a PhD in history. And I thought I wanted to be a professor in a college and teach history. And then all of this happened basically when I was in my graduate school program. I was 3 years in And I think really looking back at it, my body was kind of telling me, you know, you've been miserable for 3 years, because I loved my program as an undergrad. I thrived in it. And then I got to my grad school program and I was like, what the heck am I doing here? Like, I don't feel like I belong in this program. And I denied that for 3 years to myself. I kept just saying, you know, all of these kind of silly beliefs of graduate school is supposed to be hard. You're not supposed to be happy. You're supposed to be miserable. What a bunch of BS, right? You know, telling yourself your life should be awful. And finally, I think when I got sick, my body was like screaming at me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, our bodies is talking to us constantly. Life is talking to us, but we just have to slow down and be receptive to what is going on.
Exactly. And, you know, it was finally, I sometimes refer to, you know, my health crisis as the 2x4 up the side of my head, because I wasn't listening to all of the more subtle messages my body was giving me. And finally, I needed that whack up the side of the head to be like, is this how you want to spend the rest of your life, being miserable and telling yourself that that's okay? Because I don't really think that's, you know, I think on a deep level, however you want to label it, whether it was my soul, my higher self, that part of me wanted to shift into something else and do something that actually made me happy.
Now, you mentioned being an empath. How did your parents handle that while you were growing up?
I think my mom always kind of, you know, knew and acknowledged, like, you're sensitive. You're more sensitive than other people. And I never felt really like it was, you know, shamed or not accepted by my parents, thankfully, because I've heard stories from other people where, you know, they always got the, you're too sensitive, and it was not accepted. It was kind of rejected. But I feel like they didn't quite know what to do to help me. I think that was my biggest challenge growing up, was, you know, our daughter is sensitive. We know that, but we don't quite know, because we're not the same way, you know, and I don't think they knew the term empath. And, you know, I don't think it was as well understood back in the 80s as it is now, where people are like, oh, you're an empath. Oh, okay. I've heard that term before.
Yeah. So are you currently working on anything right now?
Yeah, I am actually working on kind of reformulating the work that I do one-on-one with people. And I'm kind of, before I had been separating kind of the energy healing and the hypnosis, and now I'm integrating it into a 6-month program where people are working with me and receiving both. Because I really believe that the part of working with our mind and our beliefs is incredibly powerful and important for healing, as well as, you know, working with the body, which is more using those energy tools that I have.
And what is your one to grow on? What valuable piece of information would you like to leave our audience with?
Yeah, I think the most valuable thing we can do is start to just become more aware of our thoughts on a daily basis. So just start tracking for yourself, like those thoughts that you hear kind of on the repeat in your head, like, are they on a tape in your mind where you're telling yourself? It could be something as simple as like, I'm tired. I catch myself sometimes in that one, like, oh, I'm tired. And when you catch yourself in those things, it's like, is that something you really want to be programming yourself with? Or would you rather replace that? And so finding ways to catch yourself in the thoughts that really aren't empowering, and then shifting them to something that you'd rather believe. Maybe something, if you're telling yourself I'm tired all the time, tell yourself I have plenty of energy for all the things that I need to do today. And you might not 100% believe it, but the more you repeat it, the more your brain will actually come to believe it.
Thank you for listening to The New Mind Creator Podcast with your host, Maurice, The New Mind Creator. This podcast has been sponsored by Abundant Sports and True Serum. Head over to www.mauriceflournoy.com to receive more motivation and insight to help create your new mind.